The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, and welcome back to Afternoons with Mike, heard daily here on the Shepherd Radio Network. At this time, it's always a pleasure to bring you folks around the country who are doing great things. And I have on the line with me a return guest today, Sherry Few. Is the director of something called, she actually is the founder and president of United States Parents Involved in Education. And that is an acronym, USPIE, USPIE. And it's great to have Sherry back on the phone. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mike. I'm glad to be back with you.
Well, every time we've talked, we talk about this most important thing. And of course, there are so many angles and so many different things to discuss when it comes down to education. We've all gone through what the impact that COVID brought. And, you know, one of the things that we started hearing about a number of years back would be this whole cancel culture. And then I started hearing the term woke. And that term has become a really bad word in my mind. It's terrible. I mean, there's so many nutty things. I honestly, with all due respect, Sherry, I think if my dad were still around, he'd be going, this world's gone crazy. It's just gone nuts with all of these organizations, even school systems, the government, you name it. We hear the word woke all the time. And it really is, it's just mind-boggling what they're having us do and what they're telling us that we should think. But that is what's going on, isn't it?
It is, Mike. And you know, I think I would be with your dad when it comes to being shocked. I mean, I'm shocked. You know, as I was reflecting today before our call about what we would talk about, I was thinking about this whole transgender movement and how in the world we got here.
Yeah.
You know, because I was 10, 15 years ago, it was an anomaly. You know, it was certainly not in the culture, in the schools, and on all the newscasts. And it's just pervasive now across our country. And so, yeah, I'm scratching my head and thinking, how did we get here? So I think it is important to look at how we got here and what we may have ignored so that going forward, we don't continue down the same road.
You know, when you think about the things that we are now being bombarded with on a daily basis, it seems like that this thing would have been around in history forever. That's what they want you to believe. That's what the woke thought and the leftist agenda in government would want us to feel, that we're on the, as they would say it, the right side of history by going woke. But, you know, the truth of it is, those of us that are older, and I know that when hearing what I'm about to say, a lot of young people would look at me like I were from another planet. But all of the kids in my grade school, we had not heard or ever conceived the notion of someone being homosexual until I was in high school. Now, I went through my entire elementary school years without ever hearing that concept, except something that would be talked about in the Bible, but no local, no in-person understanding of that or belief that that would be going on in our lifetime until they got to high school. Now, fast forward all these years now, that is almost, we're being told that that is the way of life has always been. And that's just not true.
You're right, Mike. It is not true. And I reflected on my children's time in school, and they're now in their mid-30s. You know, as I was trying to look back and see how we got to where we are. And, you know, I thought a lot about the acronym LGBTQ. You know, it's kind of a commonly known acronym now. We all know it stands for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. And I think the Q is questioning, and they added that one later. First, it was just LGBT. So when my kids were in school, I remember them talking a little bit about gay people at school. It was still very rare, but it was more common in the sense that, like you said, you know, you never even heard about it.
Right.
Didn't even know what it was. But my children would talk about it. And then when they were young adults, probably in their early 20s, one of them said to me, you know, Mom, the Republican Party would probably get more votes if they would just drop the gay issue. So then it became like an issue just very quickly. It became more acceptable as a normal part of life. People are born that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how it started. And I think because I recognize my kids are coming home from school with this concept, I didn't think about it then, but now I'm thinking about the push in the schools for this transgender ideology. And kids are believing at young ages that they're a sex contrary to their biological sex. So perhaps they were pushing the whole gay movement in the schools, you know, 20 years ago when my kids were in school. I think it's very possible that they were, and we were unaware of it.
I think just you're right.
Many parents are unaware that today their kids are being faced not only with this ideology as being acceptable and normal and people are born that way, the transgender movement, but they're also, according to this article from the Daily Signal, it's an article about a school in Arizona where a board president has basically told parents, bring it on because we're going to do whatever we want to do, you know, just totally emboldened. But there was a flyer that came along with that article where the school was advertising a clinic. Now, it wasn't on the school grounds. It was at the library, which is our, you know, those are kind of kindred spirits. The schools and the libraries are the ones indoctrinating children today. But they're advertising this clinic, and it was a name change clinic where kids who needed help legally changing their names could do so. And they could do it virtually online, or they could go in person to the library. And this legal staff would help these children legally change their names, unbeknownst to their parents.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what's happening in the government schools. It's pervasive. It's happening behind the backs of parents. And I think we really have to examine the fact that when we heard LGBT 20 years ago, we didn't pay much attention to the T, because we understood, you know, there's gays and lesbians, so they want to come up with these other terms. And I think in the 90s, we had what I called back then was a cross-dresser. If you remember RuPaul, and, you know, later he evolved into the drag queen. But we still thought RuPaul was just a weirdo, right? He's just a funny guy that liked to dress in women's clothes. We didn't really think of the sexual connotation of that.
That's right.
That's how it creeped in. And now it is the next thing on their agenda to normalize and legalize and protect under civil rights laws. And one step further, and this is really scary, but I've heard this term more than once now in the media, is and this is where it's headed, Mike. It's really sick. But what they really want is to normalize and legalize pedophilia. The new term that they're using, the acronym is MAP, and it is minor attracted person.
Mm.
So they want adults to be that want to have sex with children. And I know this is probably I'm not sure what your audience is. It's a graphic thought, but nonetheless, it is a new term that they're using, and that is their next step. And they want to normalize and legalize and show people that are attracted, adults that are attracted to children, as they call it, as victims, like they're born that way, right?
Yeah, that's
so
right.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's their normal. So that's where we're headed, and it's very frightening. And that's why I'm so glad to see parents speaking out at their school board meetings, like the parents in Arizona are, and they're saying, "This is ridiculous. We're not taking this."
Well, I pray that that kind of reaction happens across our country. On that term, LGB, now for years, I remember that was it. You know, I remember it was a big deal when they included bisexual. And I mean, that was going back to the 70s, something that was being introduced. T and Q were not even brought up until much later. And the Q now, that was a word that I would have heard back years ago. And I think most people would think that the Q in LGBTQ stands for queer, which obviously means different. But, you know, it's one of those words that we've kind of lost in our culture. You can't, I mean, the original meaning of saying it, if someone were to say, well, that's queer, that used to mean that's just different or that's odd. And that would be the connotation for this that most people would have had back with this thing. Keep in mind now that homosexuality was considered to be against the law. I mean, sodomy laws were pervasive in America for years, and that's the truth. And that, again, is something that revisionists of history are wanting us to not to think about. And I agree with you. A lot of these thoughts, they're not pleasant thoughts. They kind of evoke images in our mind about what you were saying about pedophilia. Those are terrible images, and they're just disgusting. But that is kind of the direction that all of this is taking us. And now the latest thing that came out a number of years ago is the adding of pluses and other numbers, and where's it going to end? You know, one person said, Sherry, that if it's okay for a person to do that, when is it going to be okay for a person to get married to his animal? And that's obviously, that's as weird as that is now. There's an attraction with a lot of people on that kind of bestiality. It's gross. This is terrible. But this is what our school systems are really preparing a lot of our young people for. And you're exactly right. It's being done beyond and behind the backs of parents.
Yes. And so, you know, if you want to get back to the alphabet soup, you were talking about the Q. For a long time, I thought the Q was queer. But the Q ends up being questioning, mm-hmm. meaning they're not sure which biological sex they are. And then they added on IAQ. So we've got IAQ on the end now. And the last Q does stand for queer, but queer has a different definition than what you and I recall from the past.
That's right.
And I do recall, too, that people were offended if you called them queer. They wanted to be called gay, right?
Yeah.
So queer meant sexual at a certain time in history. But now queer is defined by these people as a person who identifies as non-heteronormative. So
wow.
That's a term that you're going to hear more about. Non-heteronormative means they don't conform to heterosexual identity. And so it says they can encompass many of the sexualities and identities that we've laid out. So it's like a combination of things. It's a queer combo. And I stands for intersex, meaning these individuals have both male and female physical characteristics, and A is representative of anal sex. And I don't know why they have to keep adding all these letters. I think it's all still pretty much tied up in the first few letters, and it's just, like you said, it's just going on. Who knows what's next? And it is sick, and it's so sad that we are flushing the minds of children with this evil thoughts.
And the motive for the reasons beyond that, obviously you don't have to go very far to realize that this is evil stuff. This is straight out of just demonic and stuff that would be against the ways of God. And the Lord told us to think on things that are pure and true. And for those who are listening, like you said, I trust our listeners are understanding. I know that this is an unpleasant thing, but we have to wake up as a culture, those of us that would believe in God, that would believe in the Bible, that would not think that this is the way it's always been or that it's the way it should be. Because if it's unpleasant for us to hear it, here's the deal. The next generation is being bombarded with it, like you said, every day at school. So we can't just take a blind eye and act like this is not going on, because it's going on, and our kids know about it if we don't.
Yeah, and so if we're offended by these terms, and I do understand how people can be offended by these terms, they're not a part of their daily conversations. And I actually have a background in teaching abstinence education to young people, and we would have to use some of these terms. And I remember when I was first teaching and writing curricula for abstinence, that I was uncomfortable saying these terms in public to adults, to other adults. So yes, I forget sometimes. I think I've become somewhat desensitized because I'm involved with the study of this so much. So I apologize to your listeners if the words were offensive, but you're right. If they are offensive to us as adults, it's very wrong. And again, evil, it's just the best word to describe what is happening, what is being taught to young children, what they're planning into their minds at very young ages. You know, children at young ages are very impressionable, and we teach them to respect authority. So they look up to, you know, good parents do, and they look up to their teachers as authority in the classroom. And so then we've got this pull going on, this push-pull now where it seems as though the schools want to be the parent. And so they're taking over the role, and parents have been blindly allowing it until now. So again, the good news is parents are standing up. They're saying no. And it's not just Christian parents. It's not just Republican, conservative parents. It is all sorts of parents that are frustrated and saying, hey, wait a minute. I thought you were teaching my kid to read, write, and do math. What's going on here? Enough is enough.
I agree. And, you know, we saw this happen, didn't we, in Virginia, in Loudoun County, when the parents said enough is enough to the school board members who were the trying to just kind of run roughshod over it. Now the same thing's going on in Flagstaff. What do you see happening with that in Arizona?
Well, what's happening is the school board has said, we're going to move forward with these policies, whether the parents like it or not. And what's interesting is the parents went to the superintendent and complained, and he said, well, use the process that's in place. Go to your local school board, your elected officials, and express your concerns. That's the proper protocol. So these parents did that. They did what they're told. They followed the proper protocol, and the school board president basically thumbed her nose at them. And so they have said, we're coming back, and we're bringing more parents. And so the accountability, I guess, in this situation will be at the ballot box when it's time to elect a new school board representative and president.
Wow. Well, the fight goes on in so many different arenas, in so many different topics, but it is going to take involvement. And that's why I love the name of your organization, United States Parents Involved in Education. So that is a great working name that you have. Parents, it's time that we roll up our sleeves and we get involved, nasty as it may be, uncomfortable as it is. We've got to get involved or we're going to see our country just continue to go down the drain.
Yes, Mike, you're so right. And not only parents, of course, I think we have a great name too. And we have a lot of great parents that are fighting for good education in this country. But, you know, it's gotten so bad that I think every freedom-loving American needs to get involved, because what's happening is an intentional agenda to divide our country, to divide and conquer, and we're going to lose our very freedom if we don't stop the indoctrination of children in government school.
Could not agree more. Sherry Few with US Pie, thank you for being with me today. And we'll monitor all of this. Look forward to talking again in the future.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
And we'll be back in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike.
Would you like to increase your business's exposure in the Christian community and build your business with greater kingdom purpose? If so, then the Central Florida Christian Chamber of Commerce is the solution for you. Hi, this is Co-President Latondra Heaven. The Christian Chamber is more than just another business organization. It's a regional community of business professionals passionate about advancing the kingdom of God through the marketplace in Central Florida. As a member, get access to exclusive values-based networking events, Christ-centered professional development, marketing opportunities, and consistent prayer support for you and your business. Plus, gain access to the National U.S. Christian Chamber Coalition. Become a member today. Visit our website, cfchristianchamber.com, or call us at 407-431-0732. That's 407-431-0732.
Back again now and on the line with me for a return visit, Eric Holm is with Youth for Christ. He's the executive director of the Polk County Youth for Christ. And it is so great to have him here. We've had a number of discussions in the past. Welcome back, my friend.
Hi, Mike. It's really great to be back. I always enjoy catching up with you and sharing about what's been happening here at Youth for Christ.
You know, I've mentioned this a number of times. Youth for Christ is an organization that my wife and I were part of through our involvement in Evansville, Indiana. And I always think fondly back on those days of serving up there with a guy by the name of George Dooms. George, I saw him last, oh my goodness, this would be about 7-8 years ago. And, you know, when you think back in our lifetime of ministry of people, when you have such a great experience with a ministry group like Youth for Christ, you just never forget it. And I know that you've built quite a lot of memories there in Polk County yourself, my friend.
Absolutely. Almost 35 years Youth for Christ has been in Polk County. I've been blessed to be a part for 25 years, which, man, some days I'm like, wow, it's been a long time. But you're right. Kids that came through our ministry opportunities when they were 11, 12, 13 that are now married with families and come back and serve. And I'll tell you, I just had one young man. He came to Wilderness Camp as a kid at 11 years old and encountered Christ in the woods. And he is now just accepted a role on our board of directors. So went from being a kid to being a junior counselor, to being an adult leader. He served on staff for a little while, has supported the ministry financially in his adult years, and now serving as a board member. And how incredible to have some of those experiences, for sure.
Now, you've been around doing this, Eric, long enough that you've seen the transition that we are in right now in our country, going, first of all, into social media a number of years back, and that had a big impact on all young people. And in some ways, I think it's rewired the brains of a generation and then beyond. So what kind of changes are you concerned about with today's youth as you're seeing their involvement, or maybe even reaching out to some of them? What concerns you?
Right. Yes. How we reach them has changed in a lot of ways. Gone are the days that we build a big facility and say, come. I think that there is a lot more intentionality needed, meeting kids where they're at. It's one of the things that I love about Youth for Christ is we talk often about meeting young people everywhere. And so whether that's in the community, in the school, in a juvenile justice facility, but social media has had a big impact, and they've caused young people to be consumed in their own little world, even when we have more information at our hands. You know, it requires, they don't know how to have a face-to-face conversation with people. And so wow. Even in the way that we do groups, it has changed. Mike, I love when we get together with small groups of kids and we sit down at a table, they put their phones down. We encourage them, put your phone away, and we talk, and they have to listen, because we're going to come back and say, hey, what did Michael say just a moment ago? And so it's definitely changed in these years.
You know, you think about this whole thing that social media and friendships on social media, the connection points, Facebook calls them friends, all of that has actually kind of given us this idea that we have lots and lots of people that we reach out to. They even call all of the people that reach out through social media influencers, because they are influencing those that are watching and following. But the truth of it is, there is a great deal of loneliness among that generation, isn't there?
Yes. And along with the loneliness, I love how you brought up this idea of influencers. Many young people want to be an influencer, and they're being influenced in the wrong way themselves. Because the reality is, a large number of that is simply marketing. It's simply trying to get followers. And we know that they're going to find hope in Christ. And just like maybe in my childhood, in your young years as a teenager, we didn't have those types of technologies.
No.
And we tried to make friends in different ways, right? And so here, they're trying to fill the need to be liked, to be in relationships with people, and it's very superficial. And so it has made a big difference in the way that they interact, for sure.
Now, you mentioned reaching out to people through the justice divisions, like the JDC. Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. Juvenile Justice Ministries, and it's the same thing. It's changed much over the years. Here in this community, there's two juvenile justice facilities. And we have Youth for Christ leaders, both staff and incredible volunteers, that come and sit one-on-one with kids in those facilities. Oftentimes those kids feel abandoned, they feel neglected, they feel left out, sometimes because they realize that they've made some really bad choices, and then other times because they think, back to the influencers, that this is a reality and how they have to live their life. So people that go in and just love them, encourage them, share the hope of Jesus with them. And we've been very fortunate to be able to go in and do those things. But, you know, we also want to meet them in some of those other needs, whether it's some of the holistic needs, being there when they get out, simply learning their name. It's amazing to me when we sit down with a kid and we begin talking to them, especially in a facility, but even in schools, they don't – who are you and what did I do wrong or what do you want from me? And when we simply say, well, what's your name?
Mm-hmm.
What's your name? You matter. You have a story. Hey, tell me about yourself. They're not used to that. And it's incredible how they just start sharing some things.
You know, when people are, let's say, getting introduced to reality, the kind of conversations that really matter, and that's what you're bringing before them, it may be awkward in the beginning, but I still believe that even in today's world, kids really catch up quickly and they realize, hey, there's something very special about this. And it sounds like that's what you're finding out in your ministry as you've been doing it now all these years, 25 years there yourself. And that really, really hits the heart deeply when these kids realize that you're not just a flash in the pan here. You're doing something, you're saying something that really matters.
Yeah, that reminds me of a story. Just before Christmas, we met a young man at a school. A friend brought him along, and so he came to one of our weekly groups, and then he came to a Christmas party. So pretty quick, he came to a program. And, of course, at our Christmas programs, they receive gifts, but we also talk about the best gift, and that being the hope of Jesus. But we have a great time. They have food. We play games. They receive gifts. But then there's a couple of weeks where school is out and we don't see them necessarily. And one of my staff shared that he was at the school the week after when school got back in January. And a young man comes walking around the corner in the hallway. And at 13 years old, he sees this YFC staff leader and he just goes, yes. And our leader went up to him and he's like, great. What are we excited about? And this 13-year-old young boy looked at him and he said, you came back. Said, I didn't know that you were really going to come back.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you said you were going to come back, but you're here. And so what a powerful moment that was experienced there.
That is a great story. And just that level of care goes to show what it really is doing to these kids. It's giving them hope. It's giving them the kind of confidence that not only do they have that in you and those that are leading Youth for Christ in that area, but they can have confidence in the Lord because they're looking beyond you ultimately, and they're getting a taste of what discipleship is really all about. One area of discipleship that you guys have been, I know, very involved in, and that's helping what is a real trouble today with young people. We hear the term mental health, anxiety, depression. Those things are being used now at all-time high levels. I know that you come across problems in those areas all the time, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, we look at a lot of root causes for that. But the reality is there's a high number of people in general, but especially young people that are dealing with mental health concerns. And what I've found is that sometimes the more we talk about some things and we put it out there and we talk about depression and we talk about anxiety and we I think sometimes we lead to these ideas when others are really seriously dealing with some of them. So for us, it's back to sitting down and having conversations. And so as we hear stories of kids and they begin to share some things, there are some that we encounter and we see some really serious mental health concerns. Mm-hmm. And so in those moments, it's those community partners that are professionals in the field that we can refer to. And it even means sometimes saying to a kid, hey, would you go with me? Let me take you and introduce you to somebody that can really walk through this with you and help you in a manner of somebody that's trained and that's professional. But all of our volunteers and our staff, we do mental health first aid training. And a lot of people are becoming familiar with that. We have CPR and first aid for medical reasons, right? And people learn basic emergency care, how to work in an emergency to stabilize and get them to somebody of a higher level of ability, right? It's the same thing mm-hmm. with our mental health issues.
That is,
and so
sure.
sometimes, yeah, we talk to them, and maybe it's not a mental health crisis, and they think that they're struggling with anxiety or depression. And then as we talk to them and they begin to see, hey, you know what? Put the phone down, have conversations with people, come over here and throw a baseball around, a football around, and they begin to come out of those things. And so definitely some serious issues that require some professionals, but often it's just somebody showing up and saying to a kid, I'm here. Let's do these things together. Come out with our group and participate.
What's happening with the summer with Youth for Christ there in Polk County?
Oh, well, you know, I've told you before, summer's one of my favorite times. This June, we'll have 4 different weeks of summer wilderness camps with middle schoolers out in the woods. No electronics because there's nowhere to charge them up. Hiking, canoeing, swimming, team building activities with adults who care in authentic Christ-sharing relationships with these young people, all pointing them to the hope of Jesus. And then we also have – those are all middle school camps. There's a gender-specific camp, so we boys 1 week, girls the next for 4 different weeks. And then with our high school students, we have discipleship camps. And most often, these are kids that have been with us for a while. And so now in high school, and it's a much deeper Bible study time, it's much deeper relationships and conversations, but it surrounds some sort of biblical topic. Last year, it was really exciting. We took our high schoolers all the way up to Kentucky and went to the Creation Museum and the Ark Encounter.
Great.
And,
yeah.
You know, it was a really fantastic time walking through the creation story. Literally, Mike, we read the creation story and then we went to the Creation Museum. We read about Noah and the Ark and then we go and visit the Ark. So really some great connections and encounters there.
Just got to love youth ministry. I spent several years of my life as a youth pastor. And really appreciate all that is involved in it. And I know you're doing a great work. What is the website? And how can people get involved with the fine ministry that's going on there in Polk County?
Yeah, thank you for asking. www.yfcofpolk.org. Yfcofpolk.org is the website. We're also on Facebook. So there's lots of ways to see what's going on. But we invite people, come and see. If you're in the Central Florida Polk County area and there's some possibilities for growth in the future, we would love to talk with you. So you can give us a call, visit our website. Supportyfc.org is a very simple link. If you are in a place, we mentioned camps, well, we're looking at taking a whole lot of kids to camp, and for $200 you could sponsor a kid to go. To have an encounter with Christ. And so lots of ways to be involved, yfcofpolk.org or supportyfc.org.
All right. We've got to touch base again, man, at the end of the summer as you get ready for school. Let's get back together then, okay?
That'd be great. I would look forward to it.
All right. Eric Holm, who is with Youth for Christ Polk County. Before the break, let's go and hear a word from Albert Moeller on the recent bridge catastrophe that happened up in Maryland.
Yes, it happened because a big ship lost power and eventually drifted into a pier of a massively huge bridge, leading to the absolute collapse of the bridge. And yet the scale is a part of the problem. And this is perhaps helpful for us to think about, because We are increasingly accustomed to things getting way outside of human scale. We can talk about trillions of dollars, but we can't imagine trillions of dollars. But at the end of the day, we really can't get our minds around, say, $1 trillion, much less multiple trillions of dollars. And the ship bigness is now a part of the problem. Just ask again the folks in Baltimore who are looking at that incredible disaster with the collision between a big ship, but not the world's biggest ships, and a bridge that was built at a time when ships of that size and that tonnage weren't even imaginable. So the Francis Scott Key Bridge there in Baltimore, it was finished in 1977, so that's not ancient history. I'll admit it may seem like it. I graduated from high school that year. But we are talking about a term of life in which you have many living Americans who can say, oh yeah, 1977, and that was the year the Francis Scott Key Bridge was opened. At that time, you're talking about a big vessel in terms of cargo having 3,000 TEUs. Now, I know you're dying to find out what a TEU is. Well, think of these container ships and think of the containers. And they often look like, say, the trailer on a semi-tractor trailer rig. And you see these massive cargo ships with all these containers stacked up. And that is now the measurement. It's a TEU is a 20-foot equivalent unit. So you're thinking about one of those containers, 20 feet long. It is the TEU, the 20-foot equivalent unit. If you go back to 1977, the Hamburg Express, and the Wall Street Journal lays this out beautifully, the Hamburg Express carried 3,000 TEUs. Now, that's a lot, because just going back, say, 10 years to 1968, you're really looking at a TEU limit of about 1,500. So 1,500, that's been doubled by the time you get to 1977. Where are we now? Well, you can talk about a ship known as the MSC Irina, 24,300 TEUs. So we're not just talking about a bigger ship. We're talking about, frankly, a completely different phenomenon. We're talking about massive, massive tonnage. You're talking about dozens of these previous big ships being bundled together in one ship. In this case, you could take 8 of those ships that were typical in 1977 when that bridge opened. You could put them together in one ship, and that's just about where you are with the ship known as the Irina. Now, that's bigger than the Dolly. The Dolly, the ship that crashed into the bridge, is 10,000 TEUs because the bridge was at a certain height and many of those larger container ships couldn't get through it. Now, that's the reason why, for example, they're talking in Savannah about a massive project to lift the Talmadge Bridge there by a significant factor in order to get these larger ships through. But the Francis Scott Key Bridge would have allowed the Dolly at a certain point in the bridge to have passed. But of course, it ran into the pier. But the Dolly's little these days as compared to the ships that are often crossing the Atlantic and the Pacific. Now, shipping's had a hard time this year. You've got the Houthi rebels there in Yemen, who are a direct threat in the Red Sea. You've got water level problems in the Panama Canal that have restricted commerce. And now you've got incidents like this. It's just a reminder of how fragile our transportation system is.
You can always hear more from Albert Mohler at albertmohler.com. That was from The Briefing. And we'll see you, friends, next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.